John Pulis, live from the Netherlands, and this time we're using PalTalk. And so the sound will be different. It will be not through the phone anymore, but through PalTalk. For those who don't know what PalTalk is, you can install the messenger for free on paltalk.com and join us. We are on social issues, subcategory Other, and there you can find us. The title of the room is Untold Mysteries Out of Quarantine on BBS Radio. Today is 18 August 2007, and we're going to share some audio clippings of CSETI project of Stephen Greer talking about close encounters of the fifth kind. And we're also going to discuss the reasons of the UFO cover-up. I found new material that is well done. And we have an audience, a virtual audience in the room, in PalTalk, that can join the roundtable discussion. It's an open discussion, so when people have something to contribute in this radio show live, that is possible now. So you can join us and participate, ask questions, if maybe you have some important tips to share about information that is not available in mainstream. And as everybody knows, the slogan of BBS Radio is, if it's not on mainstream, it's on BBS Radio. And my slogan would be, if mainstream cannot handle it, we will. It's almost similar. But I hope the audio will go well using this new system. And as you know, I'm into UFO research for a long time. And part of my work is to educate through lectures, to conferences, to making alternative media. That's my passion for a long time. Since 1992, I was participating making alternative media in Amsterdam and other means to spread the news on suppressed information. That's not necessarily about UFOs. It can also be about secret societies, strange archaeology that that will, if we take that serious, that will undermine the things that we are accepted as truths. Maybe there is something more going on that they don't show us. Do we see the big picture? I recently saw some nice pictures of people having blinders on, the blinders that horses use to not to be scared of the environment. And yes, actually what we are doing is blinders off media. That's what we are doing. We're taking off our blinders and we want to see the bigger picture. And of course, people make mistakes and everybody has his own piece of the puzzle. And I want to use this metaphor to make it easier for everybody to be different. Because sometimes it turns out to be that everybody has his own island or to defend of what you consider the truth. But, think about it as if you are a investigator, and private investigator, or you are a police officer that has to investigate a car accident. And everybody knows that if you have eyewitnesses saw that car accident, that they all can see a different piece of the puzzle. They just saw a different angle. And then when you do the investigation and you listen to all those different eyewitnesses, you can maybe find out that people make mistakes or even contradict each other. Is that the evidence that the car accident has never happened? No, it's just that people make mistakes. But still, it's important to listen to all of them, and then you make up your own mind. Now, that kind of attitude, that you allow everybody to be different, and that you know that everybody has a piece of the puzzle, and that we all can make mistakes. Now, if you have that type of energy, you actually learn much more than if you have to defend one point of view. You see what I mean? And I see some people have an agenda to protect their own point of view, and that's it. What I like to do is I want to be the police officer that wants to listen to all sides of the story, and then I make up my mind, and not sooner, not earlier. So that's my whole attitude towards complex issues like, for instance, the UFO phenomena. I recently obtained a very special overview of the reasons of the UFO cover-up. And there are many different well-known people expressing it, what the reasons could be why we are kept in the dark about the truth about UFOs. For instance, when I was on national television, I made this statement. If a part
of the real UFOs turns out to be alien spacecraft, it has political, social, economic, religious, and military consequences. Those five power structures are enormous, and they all have their own reasons to cover it up, you know, to keep the people stupid about this. Now, can you name me one other topic that has so much resistance to this very topic, UFOs? And again, UFOs, if they're part of it, not all of them, but part of the UFOs turns out to be alien spacecraft, and it has huge consequences. Political, social, economic, religious, military, also medical, by the way. So we have six power structures. Because if there are alien amongst us, and they have something vast knowledge of medicine that could take out the pharmaceutical company out of business. So there is a good reason to keep us in the dark. And what I want to share with you soon is that that article that I came across recently, and I was very impressed how well it was done. Also in the room, on Pal Talk, at this moment, we have several people in the room that can actually join and raise their hand. You know, that's what you can do. You can hit the button and raise your hand. And then beside your nickname, I see a symbol of someone wants to use the microphone and wants to ask a question or wants to share something in this Pal Talk room. So that can happen today. So today there is an opportunity for the people to raise their hand and ask questions or share something about mysteries or about cover-ups or suppressed news. Anything what we're not supposed to know. So, but there is one person in this room, his nickname is called Brain in a Jar. That's his nickname. And he has a consciousness of over 1 million years old. And he's a kind of funny guy because he talks like a almost like a robot and has vast awareness of our history of this planet. And maybe he can also be part of the radio show today and share his vast knowledge and wisdoms because he's millions of years ahead of us. And sometimes he comes some with incredible information. So, according to Onno Westerman, he's also an admin of this room. Onno Westerman is a colleague of mine, researcher. He's also of the Untold Mysteries team of investigators of our webpage. By the way, if you go to our webpage, untoldmysteries.com or unexplained.eu, EU stands for Europe, so EU from Europe.eu. unexplained.eu, you can see our effort of a team building. We are approximately about 24 people, you know, helping each other, bringing this information to the open of suppressed news and information that you're not supposed to know, but you don't hear on the mainstream and that you don't learn at schools. And Onno knows me since 1992, November. That long he knows me because he saw my lecture in Amsterdam when I organized a conference there about UFOs and crop circles and crop circle mysteries. But first of all, I want to share with you a part of my workshop, because if you go to the front page of Untold Mysteries, you will see that I'm giving a workshop coming end of this month, the 30th and the 31 August. I give a workshop called Finding Your Missing Link Using Ancient, Alien, and Atlantean Symbols to Activate the Indigo People. This is a two-day event. It's a networking of Indigo people, contactees, abductees, and people who feel that they are from, on a soul level, are from Atlanteans or are from Atlantis. And I use symbols to trigger them to recognize certain symbols that are not on this, on that poster, by the way, because those symbols is not what I'm going to use. This will be in Dutch. It will be also in the future in English as well, this concept, this workshop, two-day workshop. And I will translate it for you because some people ask me to do that I cannot understand. How to channel your own inner authority. That's part of the workshop, using subgroups, and everybody get the order, not order, it's kind of a task to make a good summary of a very complex, controversial subject or topic. And the question is, let's say that you get 5 to 9 minutes live airtime to talk about your choice of subject or topic. You can choose between about 15 subjects. It could be UFOs, crop circles, healing, paranormal, whatever you choose. Many, many topics. Mind control, secret societies, Atlantis, strange archaeology, you name it. What if you get 5 to 9 minutes live on CNN? What would you say? Now, that you have to figure out with your mini groups or subgroups, and they will help each other, and then they put one person who will talk and explain what they discussed, what they think is important to share to the world. So you can exercise to be to the point, to be aware how you come across, what you say, how you say it, what you're going to say about your choice. That's part of the workshop, and kind of a mini lecture. Also, we do a time loop 2012 experiment with a video feedback. Now, that's kind of weird. How do you mean that? A time loop 2012 experiment? I will come back to this later, because it's too complex to explain now. Also, we will give an introduction into lucidedroma, we call it in Dutch, lucid dreaming, astral travel, and out-of-the-body experience. Because me having a near-death experience in the past, I'm not into believing anything. I just know that's possible. For me, it's not a need to believe. I just know. I just experience. For me, it's as normal as, eating bread or whatever. So this is part of the workshop. Also, introduction in remote viewing. And we will share the documentary of Mary Wadwell called Expressions of ET Contact, a Visual Blueprint. She had won an EBO award, and what we're going to do is we study this documentary, and I will ask questions. I will put people to the test, what they have seen, because there will be some remarkable things in that documentary on the DVD that I will share with the people on that workshop. Also, we're going to talk about how can we have access to the so-called junk DNA? Can it be accessed? Is there a way to decode the so-called junk DNA? We also have some paranormal experiments in the group. And then, most of all, we're going to do a CE5 protocols of human initiative of ET contact. The CSETI team, CSETI.org, talks about it. The Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, the CE5 protocols, is how to take the steps to connect with the extraterrestrials. What can you do? How do you do that? And why is it important to do this? Not only that we see some strange lights in the sky, but that there's also intelligent interaction with them. Now, that is also part of the workshop. So now I'm going to share with you all a part of that workshop that's given by the CSETI team with Stephen Greer. You can listen to how they explain why Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind is so important for us. So listen to this. This is information summarized, of course, to understand the concept of Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind.
Hello, this is Sherry Adamek of CSETI. Part of my work in CSETI is coordinating the working groups and the rapid mobilization investigative teams. This tape is on the CE5 initiative, and it's taken from a presentation done by Dr. Stephen Greer in Denver, Colorado in April 1995. The challenge of formulating teams of people to actually establish a relationship with these life forms is great. We do not want to diminish the logistical, theoretical, and other issues, but the basic premise is something very simple, and that is, we are here. The extraterrestrial life forms are there, and frequently are here as well, landing on terra firma. Does it not make sense to move from the position of denial or passive observation into a role of active participation, attempting to engage these life forms and their spacecraft and their occupants in some type of relationship and dialogue. For this reason, the term close encounter of the fifth kind was created to explain an entirely new category of encounters with these extraterrestrials. A close encounter of the fifth kind is when humans deliberately take the initiative to interact with or communicate with, no matter how simply, with these life forms and their spacecraft. It is that simple. It may be as rudimentary as someone driving down a road and seeing a spacecraft that is obviously not of human manufacture and signaling their bright lights on and off, and the object stops, comes over, and signals back in the same sequence. There are dozens of cases of this occurring. It is a simple exchange. It may be ridiculed by people as simplistic, but it is an important step because it is an attempt by a person to reach out to these occupants, and they stop and take the time to answer back. It doesn't matter if there was any substance to the communication. The fact that hello was said and an answer came back is profoundly important. It is a quantum leap in the relationship. The other types of close encounters which have been described are: close encounter of the first kind is the sighting of an extraterrestrial spacecraft within 500 feet. A close encounter of the second kind is a landing trace or an electromagnetic trace, some sort of physical trace that is left by one of these objects. And close encounter of the third kind, as everyone knows from Steven Spielberg's famous movie, is the sighting of one of these humanoids or life forms, usually in association with a spacecraft, but not always. A close encounter of the fourth kind is when someone is actually taken on board a craft, and while this is rare, there are a few cases where it appears that this has happened. And a close encounter of the fifth kind, then, is the first category that is not passive. If you look at the other four, you see that they are essentially passive categories. Even a close encounter of the fourth kind, for the most part. This is a category, and the fifth kind, where humans take the initiative and in a cooperative spirit attempt to interact with or have an exchange with these life forms, their spacecraft, and the occupants on board. It is an important new category because it is a new concept. It is a new paradigm of interaction that goes from the usual passive modality or retrospective modality to one of real-time, proactive communication. As such, it is a milestone in the development of the relationship, because it conveys to the extraterrestrial life forms that we are reaching the point of maturity where we are willing to end our denial and end even our passive observation and step into a state of empowerment where we will say, we are capable of communicating with you and we wish to communicate with you. This is a very significant statement for us to make to ourselves and for us to make to these life forms. Our sense is that they have been waiting for this statement, not out of the barrel of a gun, but out of the minds and hearts of a sincere attempt to say hello for at least 40 or 50 years in an intense way.
Okay, that was from Cissetti. That is just part two. I have more to come. I will also have a short musical break as well. You can always raise your hand in the Pal Talk room and ask questions or share your thoughts about this. I had successfully two times a CE5 encounter myself. I was reading about it in the early 90s about this when Colin Andrews was invited to speak in the Netherlands in Amsterdam to talk about crop circle mysteries. He was a part of the CSETI team, and when I met him, he was talking about his own experience, successfully did a CE5 initiative in England, and a crop circle formation appeared, as that they did a group thought, a coherent sequencing, and also asking for a crop circle to form with a certain symbol, and it appeared with results. And that's not only that, they also had a UFO encounter with the film camera team, were just finished with packing everything. It was raining. And at the moment that they just gave up, the objects appears in the field, in the crop circle field, like a Christmas tree. And it was seen by skeptics. It was seen by many people, also from the media, who were just finishing packing everything, you know, all the equipment. So it's kind of funny, you know, that just the moment that you don't have the camera, you know, ready to film, everything was, you know, packed, and then the objects appeared. What is important is that there were a lot of skeptical people having a own experience through this CE5 initiative, CE5 protocols. And it's happening more and more people doing it. This. It's not only that the CSETI people doing it. I myself, for instance, came with the same idea to do it, to do myself. I had a urge to go outside, out of the blue, and I had a strong feeling, I don't know why, I had to go outside. And then I saw this object, a blue-white object. And you have to keep in mind, my girlfriend sat next to me, and I was in my pajamas. And I told her, I don't know why, but I have to go outside now. And she said, John, you're crazy. And the moment that I was outside, I saw this blue-white object coming towards me from the north to the south. And I thought, this is it. And I took my torchlight. Exactly as described in the CE5 protocols, I did three flashes, you know, to flash, and you get a response. Now, what happened is, at first I thought maybe it's just a satellite, what I'm seeing. It's a little bit bigger than normal, and it was going towards me. And then when I used this torchlight, this Mac light, I was a security guard, so I had a very powerful Mac light. And when the lights of my torch, the beam of light hit him, you know, symbolically speaking, at that moment it stopped, and it pulsated like a big pulse. At that moment I was electrified. Now that in itself could be because I'm shocked, but I was totally electrified, and my girlfriend Charlotte was next to me, and she saw the same thing. And then it stopped, and then it went further over the building, and I ran to the other side of the building, taking my camera, filming it, but I had no reference points. I had no good stars that you can see how the flight path will be. So when it changed direction, you cannot see it because there's no reference points. So at that moment when I was filming, I was realizing, zooming in 8 times, realizing that this is not enough. You know, what I'm filming is not enough. I need something to, that something must be happening. I mean, I have no stars to, and when I'm zooming it out, it was above me, so there were no trees, and there were no clouds, so it's difficult. So what I ask mentally, request, is do something for my camera, please, because this is nothing what I'm filming. You know, this can be anything. And if you move with your camera left and right, then the object will seem that the object moves, but it's not true. It's you moving the having this handheld camera, especially when you zoom in. So you have to practice yourself to be very calm and zooming in, and don't use autofocus, and use, you know, a manual focus. And at that moment, when I asked this, do something for my camera, because I just read about the CE5 protocols, that you can actually have a mental telepathical contact with the object. And when I asked this request, my sentence in my head asking this to do something was not finished yet, and it started to pulsate 6 pulses a second, 12 seconds long. That happened when I was filming it. And I was showing it to Professor de Graaf, Wim de Graaf. He's a professor in astronomy. And I show this tape. He came to my home because I explained, is there any kind of object going from north to south? Could it be a satellite? He said, no, it's not a satellite. And I knew exactly the time when it happened. It was 22 hours and 33 minutes. It's a kind of special number as well, 22 and 33. At that moment when I was filming it, showing it to the professor, and he said, this is not a satellite, this is not a weather balloon. What is it? You know, I mean, it responded to my torchlight in the first place. I have my girlfriend that can confirm this. Why do I know that I have to go outside? Why? Why do I have this urge to go outside and then I see it? What is this? You see, this is the same as in the Close Encounters of the Third Kind. When you see this guy completely not knowing why he has this knowledge to do things. So it's kind of personal, of course. If you have this kind of personal experience, you know that can happen. The other CE5 initiative experiment that I had, that is also personal, that was when I was into crop circle mysteries. I thought it would be nice, it would be great, if there was a crop circle in the Netherlands, you know, where I live, in my neighborhood. At that particular time, I was living in Zoetermeer, and 1997 was that. And I ask, can you arrange a crop circle for me, whoever is out there? I want to see a crop circle myself in the Netherlands. And what happened the next day, I was in the train together with my girlfriend at that time. And again, I had this urge. I had to look outside. And I told to my girlfriend, that girlfriend told her, I need to watch outside because there's something out there. And there it was, a perfect spiral glass circle of 40 centimeters height, 1.5 foot high, and everything was chaotic except the 7 meter diameter, 7 times 3 is 21 feet diameter of a perfect spiral. I photographed it, by the way. I made many beautiful pictures of it. Spiral. A grass circle, not a crop circle, but a grass circle, green grass, you know, it's high grass. And everything around it was chaos, but in the middle it was a spiral, perfect spiral. I went over there, and again, this kind of things happened to me, and that's the reason I think it's important to do more and learning more about the close encounters of the fifth kind. I think it's for real. You know, people complaining that, nothing happens to me. I think everybody will be mirrored back in your own belief systems. I give the mic to Dutch Peaceful Remco from the Netherlands. He will going to respond. So I cannot respond to him immediately because in Pal Talk is only a one-on-one. So we have to wait each other to speak again. So I give the mic to Remco to respond. Here it is.
Okay, thanks for the microphone, John. What interests me is you did see it come pass over your house, and you did flash with the torch, and did you have a certain feeling with it? Because you're describing, you had a feeling you just had to go out, you know, because, well, you expressed something. Did you get a feeling after that? You know, like if they were trying to communicate with you in some way or form?
Everything we see in the world is in a state of metaphasic flux. The crop circles are manipulated through transference of mind energy along a kinetic pathway. The heat is not unlike steam. However, the aliens have technologies able to manipulate the very fabric of time and space itself. The gluons and the electrons that disappear in and out of our time and dimension into another dimension. Everything we see is not solid, but is in a state of flux. These crop circles are easily explained when you know about these sciences.
Yes, that was Brain in a Jar. This is nickname on Pal Talk. And I said in the chat, you can take the mic if you want to. But everybody, when you use the microphone, please state your name and state first who you are, because otherwise it's getting confusing from the radio listeners, because they don't know who's talking, who's saying what, you know, and who's doing what. So next time, please state your name, and then whatever you want to share is no problem. I want to respond to Remco. Dutch Peaceful is his nickname on Pal Talk. If there's a relationship between what I see, I think so, yes. Because when I had my first UFO encounter as a security guard, I came in the press. I had my interaction with the people. People give me some tips. I have more things, weird things happening to me that the questions that I had, I had thousands of questions when I had my first UFO encounter in 1990, that I actually get a very excellent tip from Charlotte. She told me something very important. She told me, John, ask a question before you're going to sleep and ask for a vision or an insightful dream that maybe through that means you can actually have more insights why you have this strange experience. Maybe they will give you something. And because of that attitude, you can actually ask a question and then let go of the questions. You just trust that it will come to you. Now, I have since then, I had so many confirmations and synchronicities with beyond belief that is so absurd. You know, if you have a weird confirmation and certain people come to you on your path, in your life, in a short period of time, and so many times, then it's going to be ridiculous so many times. So for me, it was a kind of a... I have a catch-up to do. It's like that I was having a stagnation. I had a kind of a task to do, but I didn't do it because of whatever reason. I had my normal life, of course. And then I had this UFO encounter, and then I have to have a catching up because I was behind schedule, I would say. And then I had so many strange things happen to me since then that I don't see it as a something what you have to read from a book or what you have to have from someone else. No, there is a true connection with these strange objects that I see. I've seen in total 9 times a UFO. I have visions that came true. I had had very profound contact experience as well. One abduction experience also, but most of it are just contact experiences, and they are so personal and profound for me that I feel strengthened, especially knowing that we are spiritual beings having a limited human experience. It's not the other way around. Some people say, oh, you are a human being having sometimes a spiritual experience. No, you are a spiritual being having a limited human experience. And that's what we are. We are just having a limited experience, and we call that humans. But our soul is much older than who we are. So we're going back to the story about CE5 protocols and brain in a jar. When you talk, this is interesting. Let's say there are approximately 12 stages of a journey of discovery and awareness and knowledge and wisdoms. And then you go to the next stage, and you go to the next stage, and you go to the next stage. At the end of this journey, you will find out that if you come to that point that you know it all, and that you have all the wisdoms and knowledge, the vast knowledge, you will find out that the journey was more interesting, you know, having this wonderful adventurous feeling of adventure and discovery, that in itself is the true meaning of life. So reaching the end of the goal is not it. The true fun is, you know, what is the meaning of life? Is to give life meaning. And how do you give life meaning? Is to have an adventure, to explore, to be a traveler, to have a journey. But in the moment that you reach the end of the journey, then you say, and you look back, then I felt I was alive because I had that journey. If you didn't have that journey and you don't appreciate the journey, you just say, I'm all awareness, I know everything. Now, that state of mind is maybe wonderful for you, but in general, the true meaning of life is to give life meaning.
The human brain is vast and expansive, more real and able to contemplate thoughts beyond all thought. Space is an empty vacuum with celestial bodies which mingle and intermingle one with another. The brain is quite similar in the way that it has neurological pathways which make connections and gates not dissimilar from a computer. the brain and mind of a man is able to touch and to taste far more than in the physical world. The infinite understanding of the mind has not yet been contemplated. The mind is able to touch the fourth, fifth, and sixth dimensions. It is not physical, and therefore the mind can explore realms that are beyond the comprehension of most human beings. The aliens showed me how to use my mind to learn and to adapt to different dimensions. I am able to think in patterns and ways in which would take a normal human thousands of years to be able to adapt to. We know that our mind, we use only 10% of our brain. My brain currently runs at 56%.
Okay, that was, again, Brain in a Jar. That is his nickname on Pal Talk. As you know, that it's all a point of view. You know, what is important? What is, you know, if you look at an animal, like, for instance, I like my cat. Now, when I look at my cat or my dog or whatever, and at that moment, when I being empathic with that, what I'm seeing, I try to be feel like if I'm a, if I would be a cat. Then I realize that a cat doesn't have to worry about much, you know, it just is. And the beautiful thing is that if you connect with that, what is completely get rid of worry of this, worry of that, and just, you just be, enjoy the moment, enjoy the now, there's a very powerful energy. Most people are diverted away from attention, away from themselves. And I, you know, they found out, for instance, that when autistic people going to a farm with animals, they actually become more loose and more freer. And also that is also with children that are very difficult to handle, to control. If they got in contact with animals, that something happens, especially, of course, with dolphins. So when we talk about so-called awareness and knowledge, that is not enough. To connect, to be empathic with something that is alive, that is in front of you, there's another kind of connection, awareness, and being. And some people think that knowledge is important, but I think that to connect and to relate and to be empathic is the key to truly have a spiritual evolution. Those who are in control right now, at this moment, those puppet masters, actually are not that empathic at all. They need someone else to get power, so they actually are powerless. So when you have a need to control someone else, and you are power hungry, and you need to have power over someone else, actually what you do is you make a statement that you don't have it. Because if you had it, you don't need to manipulate the other anymore. If you had it, you don't need to be a parasite anymore. You see what I mean? So the power lies not in seeking it outside yourself, but it lies within. And this connection with within is to relate and to have being empathic with everything that is around you, everything that is, including those that you don't understand. And still you can connect. That's weird to say. How can you connect with something that you don't know what it is? Maybe because you don't know what it is, maybe you connect better. Because if you think you know what it is, you actually connect with your own story in your brain about something. That is not a way of connecting with something that is out there. Sometimes the best thing that can happen to you is that you don't know. You just see it is, you know, it is there, and you don't know what it is. You just connect. And maybe you get different insights or awareness inside of you and will grow. And then you have to use different vocabulary. You have to use different words or different means to explain, because language in itself is a trap. So you have to look for different means to explain what you become aware of, you know. So let's say that you confront with an alien and you think you know what it is, what the alien might be. It must be a demon, for instance, that is a way of looking at things, then actually what you do is you label that what you don't comprehend, what you cannot understand. So your own limitation, you project it on it what you see. But that is not communication. That is not interacting. That is you talking to yourself. It's you having this story in your head about what you see. So you're not communicating at all with what you see. You're communicating with your own limitations. Now, that is interesting, and it's the same with the CSATI protocols. They talk about that very concept of who are we? How can we communicate, really communicate? How can we interact? On what basis? Is it the basis of, I don't want to explain too much, because otherwise I'm going to talk too long, but I think that CE5 protocols is wonderful done. It's a good basis to comprehend what the basis would be if you want to interact with, for instance, extraterrestrials that maybe on a soul level we are related to. And if that is the case, if our soul is related to those extraterrestrials, then we have a whole different ball game. Then we have to ask ourselves, who are we really? Who are we really on a soul level? Are we from here, from this planet? Maybe not. Maybe we have to be reawoken. And that's the reason that I call it activating indigo people. Because most people that are into aliens and abductions and contactees are actually indigo people. Those who are going to help and assist the shift towards 2012. And the shift is all about comprehension, mind shift, using more of our potential, allowing yourself to not knowing everything, and that you actually have an antenna open that things could be different. And if you have this total openness from what is out there, and you reach out, it will come to you, and you will be mirrored back in also in your fears as well. So you have to be careful about what you send out. And those CE5 protocols talked about that very subject, that very problem of our hidden fears. We have to go through that first to go to the next stage. So I'm going to share music, and then we're going to continue talking about listening to Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind. I think it's a very important issue from what to do if you really want to reach out and want to communicate with something that is maybe, again, related to you, and you're not aware of it. It's like going home again. Have you sometimes that feeling that you meet a person and you say, it's just that I feel like going home again, because I actually don't belong here, but I feel that for certain individuals, they have a vast wisdoms or knowledge, and that you recognize for who they are, and that you feel comfortable with them, and energized, and that you resonate with it, because you actually on a soul level connect. Now that's the whole thing with this workshop that I'm going to do. We have a musical break, and then continue to listen to Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind. We'll be right back. Okay, that was Halo 2. I had to ask Seth of BBS Radio. He actually asked me if it's okay to do in the future not 1 hour show on BBS Radio, but 2 hour show. And I said that would be cool, you know, no problem with that. I always make 3 hour radio shows every Sunday on Untold Mysteries Radio. So, but it's up to him if I'm allowed to continue with this show. I'm not knowing if he's listening. Seth is taking over the technique on BBS Radio because Donald Newsom is not there. I think he's on vacation or something. So it's up to Seth if he allows me to continue. Otherwise, we have only 7 minutes left. I want to continue with this Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind. Awareness, knowledge, how to prepare yourself to have your own initiative to connect. And why and how and what the basis will be to do this. Again, this is a part of the workshop that I'm going to do. Okay, here it is. You're listening live to John Kulis from the Netherlands on Untold Mysteries Out of Quarantine on bbsradio.com. And the date of today is 18th August 2007. Here it is.
Frequently, the question. Frequently, the question will be asked, why don't these life forms land on the White House lawn and just get it all over with? Well, aside from the fact that they would be shot down by artillery or anti-aircraft missiles that are surrounding that facility, it is an extremely simplistic view of the question. Because they have let the world know, even though we have denied to each other in terms of sharing the information, that we are not alone and that they are here. And it is our responsibility, not theirs, to take the next step. It is utterly a state of mass codependency to look to the extraterrestrials and wonder why they are not doing everything for us, or why they don't land on the White House lawn. The opportunity is there. They know that. We know they are here. So it is our responsibility to take the next step and say hello back. This is a sign of maturity. The maturation in this embryonic relationship occurring between humans and these life forms. And it is an important vision that the civilian population on this planet should grasp. And that is, this can be done through relatively simple means by groups as small as 4 or 5 people in a rather successful, dramatically at times, successful fashion. We do not need the permission from the military-industrial complex to do this. It would be preferable, of course, that the institutions of our planet come together in a spirit of global cooperation to achieve this goal. And it is our fervent hope that indeed they will do so at some point in the relatively near future. But at this time, pending the development of such institutions and such capabilities, people who consider themselves citizens of this world have the right to enter into what can be called citizens' diplomacy. This is where groups of people can take it upon themselves to go to areas where these life forms have been observed or spacecraft have been seen and attempt to establish some degree of communication contact. This cannot be done too often or by too many people, so long as it is done in a spirit of cooperation and peace and open-mindedness. Indeed, it has been our experience in the last 4 years of this experiment that the rate limiting factor in all of this is the intentions of the members of the research team. The Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind initiative is an attempt to put teams of people together to go to the field and to establish some degree of communication and contact with these life forms. And in order for that to happen, particularly if it is a relatively low-tech and unfunded effort, the intentions of the group need to be extremely clear. It is likely, for example, that an extraterrestrial civilization, which has traveled through dozens and perhaps hundreds of light years to take the time from whatever mission they are engaged in to interact with a group of people who are mere curiosity seekers or who would like to get a photograph to sell to the National Enquirer for $500,000 or to capture some of their technology so they could invent a device and patent it and become fabulously wealthy like the next Bill Gates. I think not. And it's quite clear from the experiences that we've had that these life forms are able to remotely sense what the intentions of each member of the group is. And I think that these intentions are rather transparent. And therefore, rather than concerning ourselves so much with why they are here, we want to take a good look at why we are here and why we might want to be on a research team to go out and establish communications with these life forms. Because ultimately, we cannot do too much about the fact that they are here, but we have total control over our own motives and our own ethics and our own morals. And so let us pay some attention to that. There are sustainable and non-sustainable reasons for engaging in this kind of research. Examples of non-sustainable reasons or motives has just been listed, but they also include militaristic reasons, reasons that are totally related to selfish personal interests, personal and exploitative financial gain, etc. These are moribund reasons to begin something of this significance. After all, if you wish to have a good relationship with your next-door neighbor, you view them not as a source of something to exploit, but as a source of friendship, companionship, and shared mutual interests. If we wish to establish friendship and a sustainable, healthy relationship between human civilization and humanity and extraterrestrial civilizations, we need to be very clear on what our goals and purposes should be. Not that this precludes a certain degree of enlightened self-interest, because there should be mutual benefit from any such relationship, but it should not be unilateral, and it must not be exploitive. It must be appalling for these extraterrestrial life forms to see the general state of human morals and motives in this area, because in the covert world, the interests have been largely, if not exclusively, centered on the acquisition of extraterrestrial technology so that there might be unilateral nationalistic dominance, both in terms of military superiority and in terms of economic superiority. These are hardly healthy bases for a relationship. They are moribund and are, by definition, dead on arrival. Within the civilian community, the tabloid approach to the question, the attempt to engage in personal financial gain and exploitation, the desire to acquire information and technology for individual or corporate financial gain, a mere sense of irresponsible curiosity, uncoupled to any greater vision of how important this early relationship may be, these are all non-sustainable civilian motivations. And the ones that we are left with that appear to be sustainable from any sort of intrinsic strength and perspective would be ones that are attempting to simply establish an open channel of communication based on universal principles of mutual benefit and sustainability between our people and these other life forms. That should be the first step, rather than going in like gangbusters and saying, yes, let's establish contact, and then immediately start coveting their technology or trying to mine some sort of unilateral gain from the relationship. It would be much healthier simply to begin to say hello and begin some degree of communication and some degree of exchange of perspective. This is a much more sustainable motive for entering into this relationship. But it does not preclude, as this relationship becomes more open and more reliably established, of having specific, and I might say spectacular, benefits for the world of humanity. But even those should be with an eye towards mutual benefit, and particularly towards benefits for the world of humanity that do not redound to only one nation, or to one class, or to one subculture. Anything that would accrue in the way of benefit between Earth civilization and these other life forms, any technology, any new knowledge, must be dedicated to the betterment of humanity in its entirety and not to unilateral, nationalistic, or corporate benefit. It is our assessment that unless these basic principles are followed, these extraterrestrials will not cooperate. They will not play ball, nor should they. We would hope that they would be wise enough to avoid any such communication and contact with a group or groups which do not have these principles in place, because otherwise, the consequences will be that of further destabilization of our planet.
Yes, welcome back to Untold Mysteries Out of Quarantine on bbsradio.com. This time we're broadcasting on Channel 2, and we can actually do an additional hour, so this will be a two-hour radio show. It is just a question from Paula. Why is it that people have to sign a paper before the workshop is going to start, about the Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, and that that maybe when you have contact with them, that could end in death or disappearing or any violent abduction? He says in this paper, which you have to sign, that he's not responsible for any harm. And the question is, what is this? I'm not sure. I have to look at the link where I can find it, because this is new for me. Yeah, this is an interesting question from Paula. She called herself Yabulon. When people do the workshop with me, they don't have to sign anything. I'm different than... okay, it's on his website, according to Paula. Next time, Paolo, you can just raise your hand and ask the question in the radio show. It's much nicer if you can use the microphone instead of that I have to read it. It's much more fun, you know, that we have audio contact. But yes, I'm going to study that. From why is it that people have to sign that kind of agreement? Maybe he suspects that your behavior will be mirrored back. So let's say that you have not nice intent, that your intent is to abuse this. Let's say that you are a person like that, and that maybe you attract the wrong aliens. I mean, that could be possible. Then who is responsible for that? If you sincerely are wanting to abuse this, or you want to manipulate or whatever, you want to control this, or you want to abuse this, then maybe you are having an experience that reflects that. You see what I mean? So from that point of view, I would can understand that you never know what type of person you attract in your workshops. You know, it could be anyone. It could be a government insider that wants to join the workshop. It could be a shadow people. So if anyone has questions in the room, just raise your hand, and I see the link, csati.org, programs/, and then questionnaire.doc. There it is. I will study it, and I'm going to ask that same question when I'm going to interview Stephen Greer, because in the future I will interview Stephen Greer as well. I'm going to ask that hard questions are necessary to explore. Maybe he's afraid that people going to sue him, I guess. But that is the problem, of course. let's continue to listen to the CE5 protocols and introduction, because I think it's fascinating, you know, the basis of contact. Here it is. Continue to listen to CSADI, Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind Protocols. Here it comes.
The CSETI project has been an experiment to assemble what we call working groups or research teams centered around the premise that these extraterrestrial spacecraft are present in our atmosphere and can be interacted with by teams who use a set of protocols and a set of principles to assist them in their goals. The project has been a grassroots, largely unfunded effort involving several hundred people around the world working in various research teams for varying lengths of time on a volunteer basis. It has been divided into two main efforts. One are the local working groups, which are research teams based in a geographic area such as Denver, Canada, Mexico, or a local region such as Los Angeles. And then there is the senior research team called the Rapid Mobilization Investigative Team, RMIT, which is a type of rapid deployment team, which upon hearing of a significant wave or series of sightings or encounters, will assemble and go to that location. We've had numerous RMIT expeditions to England, Belgium, Mexico, and in the United States. Again, these are volunteers who have put their time and effort and their funds into attempting to test a hypothesis, as it were. And that is that these life forms are here, and if a team of humans come together with a core of principles mentioned previously and using a set of protocols that can facilitate an encounter, that they will take the time to come over and at least have preliminary contact with the research team. The basis for this research goes back a number of years in Dr. Greer's personal experiences, as well as a retrospective survey of CE5s that have occurred over a period of about 40 or 50 years. It is not well known to most people because they have not been called close encounters of the fifth kind when they were described, but close encounters of the fifth kind have spontaneously been occurring since certainly the 50s, if not before. For example, in 1959, on June 26th, Father William Merkheyer Gill, at the Boanai Mission in Papua New Guinea, with 38 other people, saw over a three-hour period an object, a flying disc brilliantly lit, with four humanoids out on a deck-like structure outside the craft. On the following day, on the 27th of June, at 6:02 p.m., Father Gill and others observed a large mothership with four humanoids on the outside deck and two other UFOs in the distance. Father Gill this time thought he would go ahead and try to initiate contact by simply waving at the humanoids. And guess what? They waved back. This is a simple but elegant and touching example of the kind of interaction that can occur. Interestingly, it became more involved when one of the boys at the mission was sent to go get a flashlight. They began to signal in Morse code to the UFO. This elicited a response where the humanoids were seen waving their arms in a pendulum-like motion in response to the Morse code signals, and this again by many, many witnesses as well as this priest. This caused the UFO then to advance towards the group, but it then stopped after about 30 seconds of moving towards them. After about two or three more minutes, the humanoids went below this deck and apparently went back inside the craft. But the UFO stayed over the mission for at least another hour. Now, this report was researched by Dr. J. Allen Hynek and others and was found to be credible with multiple witnesses. The father, Merkheyer Gill, was never proven to have been fabricating any of this. It was a very excellent, multiply witnessed report under very good lighting conditions because it was not exactly dark when this occurred. It was late in the afternoon. This is a good example of what we call a second-degree close encounter of the fifth kind. Second-degree meaning that the UFO was already there and someone took the initiative to interact with it. This is in distinction from a primary or first-degree close encounter of the fifth kind when no UFO is in the area, but a series of techniques are used to try and vector or guide a spacecraft into the research site. That is a primary event. These, of course, being much more rare for reasons that should be obvious. The second degree or secondary CE5s are well established in the literature. We've collected dozens of these accounts. They fall into basically three different categories in terms of how they have been precipitated or what stimulus has caused a response back from the extraterrestrials. The first, we just mentioned, is visual contact with light signaling or waving or something of this sort. There are many dozens of these sorts of events from all over the world where people have seen one of these objects and have taken the time to signal to them, and they have signaled back, contrary to what the conventional wisdom would be, that they would have no interest, would not take the time. The C-SETI project has been an experiment to assemble what we call working groups or research teams centered around the premise that these extraterrestrial spacecraft are present in our atmosphere and can be interacted with by teams who use a set of protocols and a set of principles to assist them in their goals. The project has been a grassroots, largely unfunded effort involving several hundred people around the world working in various research teams for varying lengths of time on a volunteer basis. It has been divided into two main efforts. One are the local working groups, which are research teams based in a geographic area such as Denver, Canada, Mexico, or a local region such as Los Angeles. And then there is the senior research team called the Rapid Mobilization Investigative Team, RMIT, which is a type of rapid deployment team, which upon hearing of a significant wave or series of sightings or encounters, will assemble and go to that location. We've had numerous RMIT expeditions to England, Belgium, Mexico, and in the United States. Again, these are volunteers who have put their time and effort and their funds into attempting to test a hypothesis, as it were, and that is that these life forms are here And if a team of humans come together with the core of principles mentioned previously and using a set of protocols that can facilitate an encounter, that they will take the time to come over and at least have preliminary contact with the research team. The basis for this research goes back a number of years in Dr. Greer's personal experiences, as well as a retrospective survey of CE5s that have occurred over a period of about 40 or 50 years. In terms of first-degree close encounters of the fifth kind mediated by light, we find that there are multiple accounts where large lasers have been in use, which have caused apparently the UFOs to be attracted to the area from either just curiosity or as a way of conveying to people that this is something that would get their attention. It is not known exactly why it worked, but it has been found on more than one occasion to be effective. This has occurred at outdoor rock concerts, at openings of bank buildings. It has occurred during other entertainment events. We have several of these cases that have happened, being mediated by very powerful lights or by lasers. The interesting thing about this is that light is added to two other modalities that have found to be effective. The other modality that is found to be effective is the use of tones or sound. The CSETI research team has acquired, with the assistance of Colin Andrews from Crop Circle research background and from Lindy Tucker, a series of tones that have been recorded under extraordinary circumstances and which are apparently of extraterrestrial origin. The first type of tones are a beeping tone, which have been directly recorded off of spacecraft while they have been in line sight of people. And these beeping tones, which have been recorded in Canada, the United States, and elsewhere, while these craft were seen, have been analyzed by Professor Stearman at the University of Texas, Austin, and elsewhere, and are found to not be related to any natural or man-made known sounds. Moreover, the pedigree for a number of these tones is excellent insofar as they were recorded while one or more people were observing the spacecraft and it was emitting this beeping tone. On more than one occasion, the beeping tone has been noted to be conducted through electrical circuitry inside of houses and buildings, and these tones have subsequently been recorded. We have six cases of these beeping tones. The other type of tone is a sort of trilling sound, which was recorded inside a crop circle. It has actually been heard more than once and recorded more than once in southern England in the crop circle areas. These have been analyzed as well and are not thought to be any natural or man-made sound. When they are reduced in their velocity, in their speed, you can hear a dual beeping quality, a two-step quality to the sound, which is very unusual. These tones, along with the ones that have been recorded off the spacecraft, are also used to project into space using both sound wave and over radio wave signal to serve as a sort of beacon to the ET craft, which may be able to receive them. The use of lights is something which has both primary and secondary value.
I guess you are wanting to hear those sounds. I said, John, do you have those sounds? Yes, John has the sounds. Yes, of course. If you hear this woman talking about weird sounds being recorded from those in the crop circle formations and in the field and other people having contact experiences. For instance, James Gilliant has also a wonderful weird low-frequency humming sound that is similar with the experience I had. It's a very penetrational, omnidirectional sound. It's a very weird sound. And but let's share this weird sounds that is being recorded and that they use to lure those extraterrestrials to come as a kind of a beacon, as a kind of a way to attract them. So I'm looking now in a folder where I put these strange sounds. I know that I have put them there so that I share the UFO sounds or the extraterrestrial spacecraft sounds. I'm looking for it right now in this folder. There it is. Found it. There it is. I hope you can hear it. Of course, the quality is not that high, but I will put it online soon so that you can have a higher quality listening to this strange sounds. Okay, I don't know how long this will repeat. I'm going to skip a bit and listen. I will skip approximately every minute to hear if there if it's any change in sounds. Okay, I skip now. This is the same. I'm going to skip again. Also the same. Because I have much more sounds of UFO sounds than this. It's weird. I'm going to continue. It could also be that I have the wrong file. Yes, I have another one. This is 30 minutes of sound. There is also another UFO sound. I will share that as well with you. That is recorded by, I think, James Gillian. UFO sounds, here it is. This is spheres. It's also a weird sound. Listen to this. Okay, I cannot find the audio sounds of. I will soon find it. It's on the eSETI.org from James Gillian. I think he put it online. The sounds that he recorded in Washington. Also, very low frequencies, different waves penetrating through each other. Fascinating, I found this. Very fascinating. I'm not Spock. This is fascinating still. Okay, I'm going to skip a bit, and then we talk about those strange sounds. Yeah.
Wave signal to serve as a sort of beacon to the ET craft, which may be able to receive them. The use of lights is something which has both primary and secondary value. Very high-powered lights, we feel, may attract the ET craft if they are in the general vicinity. And the beeping tones likewise may serve as a beacon, because we reason that if they pick up a tone that is of their origin being projected from a ground site on Earth, that they will think that perhaps some Earth people are attempting to reach them by using their own tones. So the CSETI research protocols involve using three basic modalities, the first being light, the second being sound, and the third being, remarkably, thought. The third modality is the source of the greatest amount of confusion on this entire project and also the greatest source of ridicule and debunking. But, as has been previously mentioned, it also appears to be the most efficacious leg of the protocol. We have found by looking at a number of cases retrospectively that a number of people have engaged in close encounters of the fifth kind quite spontaneously by nothing more than thought. For example, there are cases well documented in J. Allen Hynek's book Night Siege, where individuals who are seeing a large delta or triangular shaped craft will simply think the thought that they wish it would come over so they could see it better. And immediately the object would stop, spin on its axis 360 degrees, and then come directly over to the people who have had this thought. This is without any verbal expression or signaling or anything of the sort. It is quite obvious from these sorts of cases that these extraterrestrial life forms have a technological interface with what we call thought, whatever that is, but it's very, very accurate. Now, this may sound magical, again, to humans, but we have to keep in mind the technology that is several hundred thousand years in advance of ours will, in some instances, look magical, if not in most instances. The use, therefore, of coherent thought in an environment of nonlinear consciousness is an important part of the C-City research protocol, although it is not an exclusive one. The technique itself is called coherent thought sequencing, which we abbreviate CTS. The coherent thought sequencing is a specific technique which has been essentially discovered in 1973 and which has proven to be very useful. Keep in mind that the first premise of the research teams and the foundation for their success is to be doing this as a group of people with a clear purpose and clear principles motivating why they are engaging the research to establish peaceful communications with extraterrestrial civilizations.
Okay, I just downloaded the sound of eSETI.org with James Gillian recording a frequency that I also heard in my own UFO encounter myself in 1990. According to Dr. Greer, he started in 1990 as well. It's kind of interesting as well, the correlation between him and me. Me having also contact with pilots, military, government in the past, I had also had this concept of the disclosure project as well in the Netherlands. Part of it I did, by the way. Now I'm going to share with you this audio clipping from... I just recently downloaded it from... from James Gillian's recording. Here it is. That was the similar frequencies that I heard, and you have to experience it in real time to know how penetrational it is. It's more than only just frequencies. It's going to have an impact on your body. Let's continue listening further to C-SETI, introduction of the CE5 protocols initiative.
Themselves are used with the understanding that their success is greatly related to the integrity of that team, the purpose of the team, the ethics and the morals guiding the team members. In this entire scenario, then, we look at the whole project being a holistic one, where not just any given or single protocol is effective, nor just the protocols in their totality, but that the totality of the people's consciousness, their motivations, their purpose in being there, together with the protocols, seem to be the ingredients that result in success. Here again, we return to the theme that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. In this regard, the whole being the total picture of why the team is there and the type of protocols that are being used. We'd like to emphasize here that these are experimental protocols. They have actually gone under a number of levels of revision and evolution and innovation over the last 3 or 4 years. They are very simple in their basic premise. And that is, if a team of researchers are out in an area where it is likely that UFO activity will be observed, that by using lights, tones that are of extraterrestrial origin, as well as the coherent thought sequencing, that they will increase the likelihood of being able to guide a spacecraft into a site and precipitate a landing event and eventually an onboard encounter. Now we're going to talk about the team factor. Getting beyond the initial phase of a close encounter, such as a flyover or hover with signaling, requires that the team be extremely well-functioning. Whether people can function together well is a very important factor in how successful this endeavor can be. The totality and functioning of the team is what is very important. This team approach to both problem solving and research is relatively foreign to most people's experience, but it's critically important to the success of C-Study research efforts. There is direct correlation to the degree of integration, function, unity, and communication within the team and the degree to which the close encounter of the fifth kind will take place. Teams that seem to have a low to moderate degree of team coherence and function usually either have very little or no success at this. It appears that these extraterrestrial life forms, through their technological ability to remote view and remote sense individuals and groups of individuals, are unwilling to interact too intimately with a group of people who do not have their stuff together. This makes sense because the risk to their own person and mission of interacting with a group of humans who are discordant, poorly organized, chaotic, and perhaps to some degree out of control is too great for them to risk. It will cause them to be reluctant to move forward in any sort of dramatic way. The function of the C-Study research teams, then, is based on a concept of a high degree of coherence and interchangeability of roles. The most essential aspect is the ability of the team to function as a unit in a coherent and consultative fashion, well organized and without the usual chaos that groups of people frequently emanate. This effort, of course, is assisted by the entire group initially on the research site engaging in coherent thought sequencing, and prior to that, the experience of non-locality of mind. There is a sort of a wave propagation effect that takes place when multiple people engage in that type of activity together. The whole reality is greater than the sum of the parts. There is a team consciousness that evolves. What's interesting about this is that various reports regarding these extraterrestrial life forms indicate that they are frequently in group consciousness function and function very well in teams and in groups. Not to say they don't have individuality, because they certainly do, but it appears they are highly functional in their team process and the sense of a group mind. The fact that research teams such as what C-SETI is envisioning would also have the ability to function well in a group mind seems to resonate with them and result in a higher likelihood that they will want to interact with a team of research/diplomats. From a functional point of view, notwithstanding the value that the extraterrestrials may find in all of this, it is critically important that the team be able to work well together under potentially stressful and even bizarre circumstances. What we are really asking people to do is to go out to remote areas, frequently in the middle of the night, frequently under adverse environmental conditions, in areas where there have been frequent close encounters with non-human extraterrestrial life forms and spacecraft, and to deliberately engage in protocols to vector or guide these spacecraft into a close encounter with a team. Now, this is asking a great deal of volunteer humans who are, quite frankly, doing this on a basis of experimentation and delving into the unknown. The greatest safety for the team, therefore, is that they are able to connect to this degree of reliance on each other and team function. But beyond that, and perhaps more fundamental to it, that they are able to tap into this non-linear aspect of mind, this transcendent aspect of self, which is very calm, very stable, very clear, and which has been said before by Krishna on the battlefield with Arjuna, is beyond fear. To the extent that one can access that state, to that extent one will be able to function clearly with what has been called flow consciousness under extraordinarily difficult situations or under conditions that are unusual and unknown. Please see the report on the England RMIT report from July of 1992 for an example of this concept.
Discussion of...
Hello, this is Sherry Adamek of C-SETI. Hello, this is Sherry Adamek of C-SETI. Part of my work... To some extent, this is an open-ended experiment where anything could happen. For that reason, we ask people to think seriously about how comfortable they are with the unknown and to what extent they have fear operating in their lives. It's normal for people to be excited to such an encounter. and to an extent some degree of anxiety. But it's very deleterious to the success of the team if the individual members, or even one member of the team, becomes overwhelmed with fear or anxiety. It appears that when that occurs, the close encounter ends. Therefore, the success of the mission is put at risk. This is why we encourage people being trained in this to have extensive experience in meditation and in stress management, and to get help if they feel they have areas of anxiety or concern which they need to work through. Any human being is going to feel a certain amount of excitement and anxiety. One of the things that helps with that is the fact that we are doing this as a team. There is a sense of security in numbers and a sense of comfort that is created by several people doing this. This is why we do not recommend that one or even two people do this. It's best if it be 3 to 5 and perhaps up to 8 people on a team doing this type of research. To some extent, this is an open-ended experiment where anything could happen. For that reason, we ask people to think seriously about how comfortable they are with the unknown and to what extent they have fear operating in their lives. It's normal for people to be excited to such an encounter and to an extent some degree of anxiety, but it's very deleterious to the success of the team if the individual members, or even one member of the team, becomes overwhelmed with fear or anxiety. It appears that when that occurs, the close encounter ends. Therefore, the success of the mission is put at risk. This is why we encourage people being trained in this to have extensive experience in meditation and in stress management, and to get help if they feel they have areas of anxiety or concern which they need to work through. Any human being is going to feel a certain amount of excitement and anxiety. One of the things that helps with that is the fact that we are doing this as a team. There is a sense of security in numbers and a sense of comfort that is created by several people doing this. This is why we do not recommend that one or even two people do this. It's best if it be 3 to 5 and perhaps up to 8 people on a team doing this type of research.
Oh,
Okay, we're going to continue listening to the CSETI protocol, CE5, of CSETI.org. You can go there to inform yourself all about it. CSETI.org. The founder of that CSETI is Dr. Greer, and he's been on television many times before he became famous about the Disclosure Project. I have in my video archive of over 400 VHS tapes, footages of them being in Gulf Breeze, Arizona, for instance, using torchlights, and you see an orange object, like a potato shape, and they were three objects, not in a triangle formation, but they used the lights to ask them to make a triangle. And there was a water, a Gulf Breeze on the coast. And then slowly, those huge orange objects made a triangle formation. And you see the beam of light hitting that object, and it reflects back. It will pulsate back. And I've shown that on lectures in the early 90s. And that was also part of the Project Starlight. You just Google Project Starlight of Dr. Greer. Very fascinating. And they do, with many teams in the world, doing CE5 protocols, Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind initiative. So we're going to continue listening to CE5 protocols from CSETI.org. That's the last part. And then we're going to over to another topic. Okay, there's no sound. I wonder why. Okay, then I have to use a different... I know why. I see. It's because this one should be higher, and it was dominant. Sometimes if you use different players, the other one is dominant.
CSETI has a series of protocols which deal with two basic functions. One is the actual internal functioning of the team, the lights, tones, and thought, which we call the contact trilogy. There are others involving the internal functioning of the team that have to do with various positions the team members have. The CSETI Research Diplomatic Team has therefore a coordinator of the team, which is in a position of leadership to help coordinate the functions of the entire team. There are also boarding party members that are rank ordered, numbered according to their level of skill and comfort, being put into a situation where they may be asked to go on board one of these spacecraft. The reason these are numbered is so that in the event that a landing occurs, and assuming that the extraterrestrials don't have their own preferences as to who should go on, that there not be any sort of confusion or debate at the time of landing as to who should be actually going on board and in what order. Communications are ordered in the same fashion. There are primary, secondary, tertiary, and quaternary communicators who are not to communicate simultaneously. If the primary communicator fails at the task communicating with the extraterrestrials, then the secondary would then begin, and then the third, and then the fourth. The idea here being that you want backup systems, but you also don't want a Tower of Babel occurring on site where multiple people trying to communicate various things to the same life form at the same time. There's a sense of order and structure to this effort. There are also people who are trained in documentation of the event. Each member of the team is asked to have a microcassette recorder so that the entire event, from the time it starts until the time it's over, is dictated into a microcassette recorder in as close to real time as possible. The team also has people who are asked to document in the way of photographs and videotape and other means. If the team is large enough, we also ask that the team have a site security person to be sure the site is secure, and above all things, to be sure there are no incursions into the site that could jeopardize the team or risk their safety from other civilians or military. We also have people who are in charge of equipment and other logistical efforts. The other internal safety feature is the buddy system. Members of the team pair off into partners of two or sometimes three people to a group so that if one member of the team becomes either upset, anxious, or can no longer function, their buddy will then accompany them to an area that is considered safe and out of the area of the team's operation. The idea here is that it's important for people to have someone they can connect with if they are uncomfortable with what is occurring. The other reason is for basic safety. Since we are frequently operating in dark, remote regions, we have found that unless there's a buddy system, someone may tend to wander off for a while and the team won't know where they are. Of course, there's a risk of falling and getting injured, too. So we ask that people use the buddy system and they check out with somebody when they leave for a few minutes so the team need not worry about where they are and if they are okay. These are practical considerations, and there are a number of them as to how the team is structured. In addition, there are protocols that are not internal ones but deal with what we do with the extraterrestrial situation when it evolves into a landing or a very close encounter. From the time of a clear lock-on with signaling of a spacecraft, from that point on, the team is asked to take a posture of possible imminent close encounter, up to and including an onboard event of the entire team. The ET's technology certainly would allow them, if desired, to suddenly have the team be put on board the craft or for the team to be in a landing situation within a matter of 1 to 2 seconds. For that reason, once there is an object in the area, the team is in a preparatory phase for that level of event. It should be remembered that the entire time the encounter is occurring, the members of the team are asked to be able to be in touch with this non-local aspect of mind and to be remote viewing not only the craft but the occupants of the craft and to be communicating. Even if there is not a landing type of situation, there will frequently be members of the team remote viewing the occupants and communicating on that basis. This often happens even before a physical spacecraft is seen. This has happened on multiple occasions. Once there is a possibility of an onboard encounter or remote communication begins, there are a set of protocols written out in this kit that go through what should be essentially conveyed. What's important is not so much the protocol itself, but the protocol is interesting because it indicates what types of questions and comments should be made. What we do not want to have happen is someone going on board and being completely at a loss as to what to say or do, or launching off into some personal agenda. The basic principle behind these protocols is that the interaction should be respectful and as non-invasive as possible. The questions, if any, are open-minded and very gentle in their nature. Out of a sense of diplomatic protocol, the first question the team should ask is then, do you have any questions of us? They are guests of this planet, our home planet of origin, and we feel it is proper decorum to convey to these life forms our willingness to be of service to them and to answer questions which they may have. This changes the dynamic of the relationship to one where they may be concerned that we are there to try to exploit or get information out of them or hit them with the famous 64-question routine. Instead, it turns into something where it becomes quite clear that we are there for the purpose of saying hello and establishing a relationship and availing ourselves to them should they have any questions about us, about our people, or about this planet. We feel this is a very important dynamic to establish. It says a great deal about the team and why we are there. It establishes that to these extraterrestrial visitors. In the event it becomes clear that we are willing to have us ask them questions, our suggested questions are deliberately designed to be open-ended. Such questions as, what can you tell us about your people, and what can you tell us about your mission here? Instead of, what planet are you from, and what are you doing in this area tonight? Those sort of very pointed and closed-ended questions tend not only to get less information, that can appear to be pointed, intrusive, invasive, and rude. For that reason, we recommend that the exchange be on a more open-ended basis initially. Later on in the encounter, it may be that more specific exchanges would be possible. Understand, of course, that these protocols may be thrown out the proverbial porthole window. The entire encounter may take place on a non-conventional and perhaps non-linear basis, where the team with the occupants may simply be together, sitting quietly and doing nothing, to use a good Zen phrase. We recognize that the nature of these encounters will first of all vary from team to team and situation to situation. They are subject to revision at a nanosecond's notice. However, with that said, it's important to again acknowledge the value of having a set of protocols that can be fallen back on. If those are non-existent, you're going to be asking for chaos and for a completely disorganized encounter. In such a case, we seriously doubt that these life forms would want to have anything to do with the group. The fact that they will know we have protocols in place, that we have internal self-discipline in place, that we have a plan in place, I'm certain gives these life forms a degree of confidence that A, we know what we're doing, B, that we are serious, and C, that we are not going to be dangerous to them or to ourselves by getting out of control. So this is extremely important. And the stranger the encounter is, the more important it is that you have that kind of training, both in terms of your internal self-discipline by accessing non-local mind and by the entire group having a sense of purpose and a sense of protocol to follow. Above all things, the guiding principle is that of conveying to these visitors that we desire to engage in an open and mutually beneficial relationship with them. We wish to convey to them that they are welcome here and that we are willing to cooperate with them in establishing this dialogue. We want to convey to them that we recognize our essential oneness as intelligent life forms, that on the basis of non-local mind or unconsciousness, that we are really one people inhabiting the same universe. We want to convey to them in a very clear way that we acknowledge that. Above all things, it is important to establish the quality of the relationship that is desired at the very beginning and in very clear terms. Whether it is through a remote view or through an actual face-to-face encounter with a life form, the principle is to convey to them our essential oneness, the fact that they are welcome, and that we desire to establish an open, mutually beneficial, and peaceful relationship with their people. Thank you.
You enjoyed it today. It's almost finished. You're listening live to John Kulis from the Netherlands, talking about Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, csedi.org, and I'm going to do that exactly in end of this this month, August of 2007, in the Netherlands. I give a workshop of 2 days, and you can, if you want to know more about that workshop, I will do the same workshop in America next year. I will go to visit America. Just Google UFO Expo Area Bay, or Bay Area Expo. Just Google it, and you will see it's in California. In September 2008, I will be giving a lecture there, 2 times 2 hours and one hour, and a workshop. So I'm going to visit the United States. Yes. Listening live on bbsradio.com. Every Saturday, Untold Mysteries Out of Quarantine. And I hope you have a wonderful day. I go slowly going to release the mic to BBS Radio because it's almost at the top of the hour. Go to unexplained.eu. .eu is Europe, to know more about my work and effort. Our work, I have to say.